As Scott mentioned, my name is Bill Stetka. I'm the director of Orioles alumni and team historian. I've been with the ball club for 27 years now. Started as a sports writer, moved into public relations outside and was official scorer for a while before the ball club asked me to come work in their public relations department. In 2008, I transitioned over to start our player alumni program, and this year had team historian added to my title. I'm a native of Baltimore. I saw my first Orioles game in 1961. Our panelists today, Greg Bader is our Senior Vice President of Administration and Experience. Greg was named to that position in the fall of 2019 and oversees all facets of delivering the ultimate Camden Yards experience to our fans, including ballpark operations, customer service, broadcasting, and brand marketing. Greg is also a native of Baltimore, who has spent his entire career with the ball club, starting in 1994 as a PR intern. He's also since served as party facilities coordinator, spring training coordinator, advertising and affiliate relations manager, and communications manager. In 2012, he was named Vice President of Communications and Marketing, a position he held until taking over his current role. Also with us today is Joe Speer. Joe is the founder of Populous and led the firm's transition from HOK Sports to become the preeminent sports architecture company in the country. Populous has designed 13 of the last 15 major league ballparks, and 24 of the 30 teams have collaborated with them in some way over the years. His company has done as much to shape the fan experience as any player or owner. His works include Coors Field, Petco Park, Oracle Park, and of course, Oriole Park at Camden Yards. More than baseball, he has helped revitalize urban centers in more than a dozen cities. He's a two-time winner of the National AIA Honors for Urban Design, including being the only time a sports building has received such recognition. So I'd like to welcome Joe and Greg to our panel. I'll start with some questions for the panelists before opening up the floor to all of you. But first, a little history. I'm sure most of you are well aware of this, but the Orioles moved to Baltimore from St. Louis in 1954. The former St. Louis Browns became the Orioles. We played at Memorial Stadium, which was originally a single-deck structure. The second deck was added as the NFL Colts and the Orioles came into being in the early 1950s. As early as the 1970s, there was talk of building a new ballpark in Baltimore, but it wasn't until the NFL's Colts left in the spring of 1984, that fateful night, snowy night when they moved in the middle of the night to Indianapolis, that talks about a new ballpark got serious. In 1988, the Orioles were in the midst of a 21-game losing streak, and the ball club wanted to do something to get the fans involved, and they began planning an event to welcome the team back from the long road trip. On Monday, May 2nd, the Orioles returned home with a 1-23 record to a crowd of over 50,000 fans on a Monday night in May. It was called Fantastic Fans Night. It was on that night that Maryland Governor William Donald Schaefer and then Orioles owner Edward Bennett Williams announced that they had hammered out a deal to build a new baseball-only ballpark. The site selected was an old train yard on the western edge of downtown. 4 years later, Oriole Park at Camden Yards opened and became, as we like to call it, the ballpark that forever changed baseball. Both political columnist George Will and former Commissioner Bud Selig have called Camden Yards one of the three most notable events to happen in baseball in the post-World War II era, the other two being Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier and the advent of free agency. With that, I'd like to start the questions. First, Joe, can you take us through the process when you were hired by the Orioles? How long did it take before you presented your first renderings and such?
Well, Well, first of all, I want to thank you for inviting me to be here. Thanks to the Orioles. It's very good to be here and talk about this. I also want to thank Sabre for what you guys do, because I believe you've added a richness and a depth of experience to the game that makes it very special in American culture. So keep up that good work. We started sometime, obviously after the Colts left. And, you know, people say sometimes that an architect is only as good as his or her client. And we were very fortunate to have two great clients here, the Orioles and the Maryland Stadium Authority. The not-so-good part was they didn't always agree with one another. And there were a lot of debates. The MSA was, I think, Governor Schaefer, and you can cut me off in about 10 minutes here. Governor Schaefer put the fear of God into her Belgrade about being on time and on budget. And so they were very concerned about that. The Orioles wanted the ballpark to be spectacular. They wanted it to be a nostalgic themed, a traditional baseball park, but with all the modern amenities. And so back up to the question he actually asked me there, I think we got hired. I'm terrible with numbers and dates and statistics that you guys do. I'm a visual thinker. At any rate, we started, Governor Schaefer established a Blue Ribbon panel headed by Henry Buda, and they hired us actually to look at a renovation first of Memorial Stadium. And when we were done with that, I remember Buda asked my boss at the time, Ron Lubinsky. So we presented, Ron presented it, and Buda said, okay, what will we have when you're done if we spend this, whatever it was? I think it was astronomical estimate of $38 million. And Ron said, oh, it might be a B+. And so, I mean, you could tell as you look back on the, I can tell, that he was dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and I'm sure that Schaefer said to Henry Buda, you got to be methodical about this with these guys. You've got to establish that Memorial Stadium will never be what it should be, and then you'll move on. So Ron said it might be a B+, and Mr. Buda said, okay, we want to look at a new stadium, and I kind of got sidetracked from this project at that point. I was working for the Bisons up in Buffalo, New York. And at that effort, Ron stayed on the project, and that effort turned into a multi-purpose design, which, frankly, would not have been any better than Memorial Stadium. It would have been downtown, presumably, but we hadn't picked a site by then. And so the Orioles did a great thing, I think. So they released the images of that design in the newspapers, and then, of course, a reporter asked, I think it was Larry Lucchino, well, what kind of a lease would you sign here? And Larry's answer was, well, we'd do a series of one-year leases. This shocked everyone from the MSA and the governor. And that was when we started talking about two facilities, a baseball park and a football stadium. And so I got involved again. And this was over the course of, I'm going to guess it was 85. Don't quote me on that date. So it might have been 86 or 87. The Orioles asked us to participate in a design competition with four other firms. And so I got involved again at that point, and I remember by then we realized the warehouse was an icon in Baltimore. I mean, there was a newspaper article that described it as a 120-some-foot-tall building that's 50 feet wide, and as long as a train, because it was designed and built as a train warehouse. Good, the train would pull up on a siding on this side. They'd take things off of the train, put them on trucks, or take things upstairs. And so we realized that it was, a key opportunity to make this feel like it was always part of Baltimore. But we also were concerned, can't remember the gentleman's name, he was a writer for The Sun, and he apparently was close with Governor Schaefer. And he had several opinion columns, because by then people were talking about, well, could you save the warehouse? And his attitude was, that's a rusty old pile of bricks. It should be torn down. We should have something. So we were concerned because, we knew by then we'd have the Orioles as one client and MSA as another. So we were concerned about keeping the entire warehouse. So we did a design for that competition, and the MSA was not really involved in that, but they were talking to us. That kept the northern half of the warehouse. And so that was kind of when we thought the warehouse was a great opportunity. So not sure I answered your question with all that.
No, that. Greg, how did the slogan, the ballpark that forever changed baseball, come about?
Good question. First, let me also say, what a pleasure it is to be here. Thanks, Sabre, for the invitation for coming to Baltimore. Part of what we love about the ballpark is that it attracts people to Baltimore, to Maryland, and has done that for the last 30 years. So it's great to see all the Orioles fans in the audience, but it's also great to see fans of other teams, other hats, even the Yankees hat I see in front of me here. But minor league teams and Japanese league teams, and it's great to see so many baseball fans assembled at once, so thanks for having me. As we approached the 2012 season, we recognized that we were about to get reach the 20th anniversary milestone of this ballpark. And a couple years prior, we had celebrated the 50 millionth fan who had entered the ballpark, and we were the fastest team in Major League, actually in sports history, to reach 50 million fans in just our 17th season. So it was an accomplishment that we celebrated, and we wanted to find a way heading into the 20th anniversary season to do something similar in creating an awareness about what this ballpark meant, not just to Baltimore and Maryland, but to baseball as a sport, and really communities across the country that have created ballparks similar to Camden Yards, and I think there's been 20 some since Camden Yards. And we felt that somebody really bright in our marketing department, it was not me, came up with the ballpark that forever changed baseball. And once we heard it, we just realized that it was absolutely the right fit, the right tone, and described in a quick sentence exactly what Camden Yards has meant to the game.
It did that. Joe, you talked about the warehouse, overcoming the obstacle there. What other obstacles did you have to overcome?
Well, I'm not sure I would say they were obstacles. I mean, it as so much as opportunities. And, I think everyone, with very few exceptions, all the organizations involved in this project wanted it to be the best that it ever had been done. They wanted it to be the best baseball park forever. They wanted it to be timeless. And, I think there was a lot of debate, speaking about the warehouse. The MSA, as I mentioned, they were worried about cost overruns. But they also wanted it to be perfect, the whole facility. But so we had to do, and the Orioles were, I remember, I think they valued the warehouse and they thought it would be a great thing. But they were worried about the functionality of having their offices so far from the player clubhouse and the press box. And so those two sort of similar concerns about the warehouse. We did a study we thought, HOK, then Populous, thought it's got to be less expensive to renovate this building than to build new space. But it was quite old. So we asked the engineers to come, the structural guys to come and look at it, and they said, yeah, it's going to last another 100 years. Then we did test fits, and that design we did in the competition that kept half of the warehouse. We looked at spaces like the concessionaire commissary, the team offices, stadium club, MSA offices, being in that northern part of the warehouse. So we did this study, and I remember we added a little sort of 2,000 square foot meeting space behind the owner's box, because often during a game, they'll trade a player. I mean, we've all heard stories about this guy played for this team today and that team tomorrow. So they wanted to have a place where they could go in private. And so after that, and I remember the MSA asked Barton Malow to study the cost of renovating it. And the good thing is it was really, because it was a warehouse, nothing was concealed. I mean, a lot of costs in renovations of older buildings at that point in time were asbestos abatement. You all maybe remember that. Well, there was no insulation in this building. It was bricks and heavy timber and a roof. So it was a pretty straightforward thing. So after we worked out that it was, in fact, actually, I think it ended up being slightly less than building those spaces under the ballpark, we were off to the races.
Greg, in 2012, there was a renovation with the 20th anniversary on the concourses and concessions. What went into the thinking on that?
As I mentioned, 2012, as we approached it, was the 20th anniversary, and we definitely recognized what a milestone that was. And working together with Janet Marie Smith and some other folks, we put together a list of areas we felt the ballpark could use a bit of an upgrade. It had been 20 years. It was standing the test of time beautifully. It looked wonderful. The fans were not clamoring for any massive changes. But we identified a couple of locations that could be improved, one of which was on top of the batter's eye wall, which for 20 years stood without anything on top of it. And there had been other facilities that had opened since that used that space as a really great opportunity. So we created the roof deck, which was a homage really to the Baltimore row homes that all have roof decks, and people spend their summers out there listening on the radio to games or probably now on their phones watching on MLB at bat. But that was what summers were for a lot of folks. So the roof deck was created, and it had that same vibe and really had created a space that for the last 10 years people use as a social area to gather before the game and then sometimes find themselves spending 9 innings hanging out. So it's a really great spot. We also that year did, as you mentioned, some renovations to the concourses concessions areas. We had a new concessionaire, Delaware North, taking over. So we kind of redid some concepts there, brought in some more local opportunities, local food. Didn't touch Boog's Barbecue. That was something that has been here for 30 years. And Boog will be here this weekend, which we're excited to see him again. He's got his bobblehead day tomorrow, so that's a great timing. And so the other thing we were doing is we had not ever celebrated our 6 greatest Orioles of all time, which is Frank Robinson, Brooks Robinson, Jim Palmer, Earl Weaver, Eddie Murray, my favorite player as a kid, and Cal Ripken. And so we unveiled plans to work with Toby Mendez, a fantastic sculptor, who created these 6 bronze sculptures of those 6 legends that we unveiled 1 a month throughout the year. It was called the Orioles Legend Celebration Series. It happened to coincide with our first year, first winning season in 14 years and making the playoffs, and it was just one of those unforgettable summers that Orioles fans have. So the fact that we were celebrating 20th anniversary, we made the postseason, and made some significant changes to the ballpark, it really culminated in a memorable year for fans.
You talked about changes. I'm sure everyone wants to know about the left field wall being moved back about 20 feet this year.
Did anybody ask Sig Meidel this yesterday? Okay, well, this was Sig Meidel's idea, and I think he would wear that proudly. Really, the analytics department of the club, so I shouldn't pin it on one person, although it is, I think it's working. It's doing exactly what we wanted it to do, which is to make the ballpark play a little more fairly and to have pitchers be able to feel like they can give up a 365-foot fly ball to straightaway left field and not have it go out of the ballpark. So, you know, that's something we've changed, and I think our pitchers are pitching with much more confidence. I think, you know, guys are coming in situations with men on base and just having a tremendous amount of confidence that a high, lazy fly ball in the summer in Baltimore is not going to beat you. So what we also think it does is create a ballpark that's more attractive to future pitchers, potential pitchers, free agents, and players coming up through the system that can learn to pitch a certain way in the minor leagues and have that still translate to success in the major leagues. So I think it has worked. We did a collaboration with the Maryland Stadium Authority to get this done in I think it was 2.5 months. The season was delayed this year. We would have done it even without the season being delayed, but that extra couple of weeks was not the worst thing in the world for the contractors. But we think it's relatively seamless. Listen, it's a shock to the system for some people after 29 years to see the configuration so different. But they did an excellent job kind of making it seamless. And I personally hear from a lot of folks who didn't love it in concept and then saw it and understood and thought it fit pretty well. So I'm curious what folks think once you're there tonight.
It's also, quite honestly, opened up the field where there are more singles hit because the left fielder has to play a bit deeper. You can't just put Manny Ramirez out in left field now and expect him to, you know, handle it. And the Orioles are blessed with a pretty good defensive outfield.
That was part of the factor, which is, listen, we have some super athletic outfielders, and I'm sure that will be the MO for how they build this team. And you're right. It's a very big outfield now, at least in the left center field. And I think it has, I think, certainly changed the game and changed the way in which our team plays.
Joe, getting back to the ballpark that forever changed baseball, did you realize that this ballpark would have the effect that it has had?
Well, I did after a time. I remember at one point, Herb Belgrade asked me, you know, what's the lifespan of this building that we're designing and building? And I said, you know, if we all do our job well, which by then I knew we all were. I mean, the Orioles were, you know, great to work with. You know, it'll last indefinitely. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, look at Fenway and Wrigley. I mean, if the fans fall in love with the place, the city will cherish it, and it will be well-maintained, and it'll be here 100 years from now. So that was... The other thing that happened was the editor of Architectural Record called me. And I was kind of young then. As a younger architect, you know, your dream at that point was to get one of your projects published in one of the architectural magazines. And so here's the editor of the magazine. She called me and said, hey, I'd like to come out and do a tour with you. And she was very enthusiastic. And she said, this is going to be, you know, really hot. So I felt pretty good about its impact at that point.
With all the other ballparks that have been built since, in retrospect, is there anything you would have done different about Camden Yards?
Well, you know, I mentioned we worked very closely with Janet and the Orioles. I can't think of anything at that time that we would have done differently. If we designed it today, there would be differences.
Open concourses, I think.
Yes, open concourses.
Just missed that.
And I think it would probably have a smaller seating capacity, and there'd be a lot more variety of seating types and products. There would be differences done today, but, you know, I'm telling you, every debate we had with the three organizations, the Orioles, the Architects, and the MSA, it was about what's best. What do the fans want? What do the Orioles need to be successful? It was a beautiful thing. I think the workmen on site even took pride in this in a way I've only seen a few other times in my career as an architect. I mean, you could tell they cared, and they knew that they were going to bring their grandchildren here someday, which is a really cool thing to think about.
The seating capacity was originally a little over 48,000, and now it's about 45.
Yeah.
How has that been accomplished? I know taking the left field wall back took out.
Yeah, that was about 1,000 seats or so, I think. Yeah. And again, I keep pointing to 2012, but right around then, either that year or the prior year, I can't remember exactly with Joe with dates, I think. The upper deck seats were widened to add a few extra inches per seat. For the comfort of the fans in the upper deck, and it ended up taking out almost 2,000 seats spread across the entire upper deck. So that was a way in which the capacity went down. I think it was one of those pleasant unintended consequences. I think the primary reason was to create a bit of a more of a comfortable seat for fans in the upper deck, but we also recognize that 48,000 fans in our market is overdone, and you know where we are now at 45,000 also may be a little high compared to what some other ballparks and some other markets are, but ultimately it's a more manageable figure than 48.
Yeah. With the lease renewal underway, the Orioles are going to be getting about $600 million from the state for infrastructure and some other things. What changes do you foresee down the road for Camden?
Yeah, that's a great question, and we are fortunate to have a governor and a state legislature that understands what Camden Yards means, what the Orioles mean to the community, to the state, and the allocation of $1.2 billion of public funds for the Orioles and the Ravens facilities is really a testament to what those facilities have done for the state. And Camden Yards in 30 years has created economic impact of over $10 billion. And for the $100 million and change that it cost to build this stadium, that's a pretty good return 30 years later. So we are obviously looking at ways in which to create a situation where fans get a better experience without in any way diminishing what is already there. Because, you know, what we did in 2012 was very respectful of what the facility is and looks and what it means to people. There's a very strong emotional attachment, and I think most Orioles fans would not point to too many things that they would like to see changed. But we certainly believe that to attract especially new fans, there are social spaces and other areas where fans who don't sit in their same seat for nine innings can come and enjoy a game and want to pay money to do that. So ultimately, we think there's plenty of opportunity to create seating options and categories and spaces that will appeal to people. There's also, you know, in reality, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of infrastructure improvements that have to be made to this facility 30 years later. And that's everything from really boring sounding things like boilers to renovations of both clubhouses, creating a media area that's more conducive to the year 2022, and creating other elements or crafting other elements that are just more in tune with the way people will interact with the facility. The video boards and the audio system is, 12, 13 years old at this point. So, that's something that will certainly be changed under this new arrangement. But, yeah, we're excited to be working with the state. They're committed to keeping the Orioles. We're committed to staying. It's just a matter of over the next few months getting that worked out, and it will. And we're really excited about the next few decades of Orioles baseball.
Before we open it up to the audience, anything either of you would like to add?
Looking forward to the questions.
Okay.
Agreed.
All right. We have a couple of microphones here, so please form lines, and we'll get to as many as we can. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Anyway, what I was saying is thank you for being here and good morning. And I think my question is probably more geared toward Greg. As you guys know, the Maryland Gambling Stadium Authority is going to bring in a sports lounge into Oriole Park. That I think is going to start next year. I got several questions for this. As you know, it's already up at Capital One Arena in D.C. One, do you know where it's going to be at Oriole Park? And two, is it going to be a year-round thing where you can go even, out of season and place bets? And the third question for this, do you have any kind of knowledge if it's going to be at M&T Bank Stadium also? That's it.
Thank you. Yeah. So we have the Orioles have just partnered with Sportsbook on a long-term agreement to have them be a part of the Camden Yards experience. It is not a betting location per se in terms of it being like a bricks and mortar place where you walk up to a counter and place a bet. But once mobile gaming is live in the state, which it is not yet, but once it is, you will be able to place your bet from that location, and it will be a themed sports lounge, sports betting lounge that has all kinds of information and charts on the wall and things like that, but you would actually use your phone to do the betting. So where it's going to be, it's still up to determination, but there's a couple spaces that we have in mind.
Do you know if it's going to be at M&T
Bank? I do not know. I do not know if the Ravens have plans for that.
Over here.
Hi, thanks for being here. First, I'm from Montreal, and we're still waiting for a return for Singleton and Torres. thanks for the Orioles for making available all your historical media guides. They are available, I think, from the first year, and it's very valuable from a researcher and historian perspective. And my question about the media guides is, what's the future for it? In the National Hockey League, for example, last year, several teams did without a media guide. So do you see the future, will the teams keep doing it?
Great question.
That's my question, basically.
I do think that there is, that it's likely there will be. The Orioles have not produced a hard copy of the media guide in the last several years. We've done it electronically, and I think that our plans are to continue to do that. I think that folks find it valuable, not just fans, but media and others. And it's a nice historical record to have. So at this point, there's no change to, or there's no plans to change that, at least in the electronic form. I think that'll stay for us. I did also want to say, as I was speaking earlier, I said Sportsbook. Superbook is the company that we're partnered with. So my apologies for that. I've got a lot of gaming stuff going on in my mind.
I can tell you, as far as the media guides, other than taking a ream of paper and going to quick print, I have downloaded the last couple and printed them out, and it only costs about $10. So it's actually less than what you would pay for it.
Thanks.
Liz?
Thank you guys for coming. My question is about the wall. I was always wondering since the beginning of the season, what happened to Cal Ripken's orange seat?
That is a good question, and I believe it is on the lower concourse, or is it in the club?
We have not displayed it.
Oh, we haven't. Okay, well, we've got some plans to display that, and when the Iron Man will hopefully be out at a game at some point and be able to be a part of that, but it is in safe company. We have not parted ways with it, and it will be repurposed in another area of the ballpark. Right now, it would be like an obstacle about 10 feet from the wall in the playing field if we left it there.
Yes, sir.
Hi. My favorite stadium is Tiger Stadium. I've never been to Camden, so tonight I'll check it out. But the thing about Tiger Stadium that I haven't seen anywhere else, I've been about a dozen stadiums, is the presence and closeness to the game. In fact, I was in the Tiger Stadium fan club, and we had this little stat that the distance from your eyeball to home plate in the last row of the upper deck at Tiger Stadium was less than at Camden in the first row of the upper deck.
Wow.
My question is just, do you ever foresee another stadium with that closeness and presence to the game being built? Because all the new ones are much more spread out, and I guess that's my question.
Go ahead.
We heard a lot after several of our ballparks, major league ballparks, were done about how we were catering to the club and suite crowd, and that was coming at the expense of the proximity of the upper deck. And it gained traction, and that was becoming a story. And I did an NPR interview at some point, I can't remember. And she asked that question, and I said, it's not really, we don't do that for the premium seats in the club and suite level. We do it to avoid compromising sight lines in the lower deck. And I said, for example, in 1988, we added 67 skyboxes to Wrigley Field, and that did not change anything in terms of the upper deck. So that storyline, vanished after that interview because people realized, well, yeah, that makes sense. So there have been cases where we have, in the past, I remember Larry Lucchino and Janet were passionate about getting the ballpark to be as intimate as possible. But then you realize, we toured, we went on a two-day tour with the governor, who was a cool guy, by the way. But at any rate, we toured, as I remember, Wrigley Field one morning, flew to Kansas City, toured what was then called Royal Stadium, now Kauffman Stadium. And when you see them the same day, it was a dramatic difference. I mean, you go up into the last row of the upper deck at Kauffman Stadium, and, it's a nosebleed seat. But I don't see that happening that dramatically again. I think if we design Camden Yards again today from scratch, it would have a smaller seating capacity. It might be, quite different. PNC Park in Pittsburgh is, it's a very small ballpark. It has a suite and club level that's kind of combined. The economics of that are a little bit different, but it did get the lower deck lower and closer. But it's not like, Tiger Stadium was like going to the theater. You walk through that dark concourse, and I'm going to mash up the quote, but you walk through the vomitory, and then there's just this explosion of green. And the fact that people were all the way around in that upper deck was pretty cool also. But I don't see that happening again because, I worked for the Cubs since 1983 off and on. And their club president, a guy named Don Grinesco at the time, I would go up and we would talk about next year's projects, and every time Gronesco asked me, have you figured out a way to get rid of those columns in the lower deck? And, you know, I would typically say, yeah, but you can't afford the structure that that would take, so.
Your question?
Yes, I went to Camden Yards first time yesterday, very impressive, had a great time. And the warehouse gets a lot of well-deserved attention, but one thing that really struck me was the center field scoreboard and all the design that went into that, and that really, I think, adds to the ballpark with the wrought iron and the clock and the Sun logo. And I was just thinking, whose idea was that, and how did that develop? What was the thinking behind?
Well, Janet Bernie Smith, who's sitting right over here, brought in David Ashton, and David came up with that, as I recall it. I think we had decided it would be there, and we had decided, I'm not sure if we did it or he did, but we decided the ladder trusses on each side, and then he came in and he did the Orioles. Was it his idea to do the run and hit flashing sign? Was that yours? Pardon?
The Orioles.
Orioles. And, you know, so it's you know, I know it's out of date, needs to be updated, but it's probably the coolest video board in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to work to maintain that type of uniqueness. It is certainly something that people note about the facility, and still try to create a more modern scoreboard that has more real estate and more places to put information. So it'll be a balancing act, but it, you know, to Joe's point, it is so unique,
iconic.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with my question with a statement of ignorance. I've only been to a ball game at the stadium once. I think it was the second or third year the stadium existed. And most of my thoughts were A, on the game, and B, on getting back to my apartment in Arlington with my uniform still intact. But when you mentioned the five greatest Orioles, it popped into my head that there is more of a history than the modern Baltimore Orioles. I'm old enough, sadly, to remember the St. Louis Browns, although the only name I can come up with is Hank Arf, who we called Bow Wow when I was growing up. And I'm old, and I know enough about history to know the names Ned Hanlon and Willie Keeler and John McGraw, Hugh Jennings. Do you contemplate the history of the antediluvian Orioles in building exhibits? One of my favorite places in baseball is Memorial Park at Yankee Stadium. And I think a Memorial Park to the history of the, I'll call them again, antediluvian Orioles might be a nice addition for the fans, especially us older guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was actually determined, and I know there was a panel on Dick Armstrong on the program. Dick Armstrong was the Orioles' first public relations director in 1954, and he actually determined that the franchise would start in 1954, when we moved here, and Dick was, I spoke to Dick numerous times, visited him with at his home in Princeton, New Jersey, several times before he passed away. But Dick was steadfast in his belief that, you know, 1954 was the start of the franchise, that nobody wants to hear that Dick Sisler is the Orioles' all-time leading hitter.
I don't know how many pennants they won in the American Association, but yeah, certainly it was before 1954.
Right. Well, we do have a number of photos of the 1890s Orioles, the Temple Cup, and things like that scattered around the offices in the ballpark. We don't do as much, really, with the minor league Orioles. I go out and give talks, and I talk about the history of Baltimore baseball, you know, starting in the 1800s and, you know, how we got to here. But we don't have a lot of artifacts from there is part of the problem. The Babe Ruth Museum does a much, much better job and has more resources for that. So we kind of leave it to them to tell the story of baseball in Baltimore before 1954.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So as Greg alluded to, we know that the fans of baseball have changed over the last 30 years. So I guess my question would be, how do you use the current data and segmentations that we have to plan for, one, stadiums of the future to address the future needs of different fans? And then also on the fan experience side, how do you use that data to kind of drive the decisions for the fans?
You want to tackle?
That's you. I'm not touching that one.
I think you can't over ask a fan what they want, and you can't over research what fans want and need. If you do what you think will look cool, on a hunch try to build something, I think with as much data as we have now, you're just missing too many opportunities. So I think the phase that we're about to enter into, where we do determine along with the state the best ways to upgrade the facility and create a level of interest for new fans. The period that we're going to be in is going to be asking some of those questions, furthering that research. We do see what works in some other markets and some other ballparks. I was just down in Atlanta recently. It's a beautiful ballpark, obviously very different from what we have, that basically are their own city. We're already in an existing city. But I think to your point, the information that we have is going to be absolutely critical as we make these determinations. It's not just purely going to be about aesthetics and things of that nature.
Thanks. Hi, you mentioned talks ramping up after the Colts left town, and then you talked about there were plans for maybe a multipurpose stadium, and then you made the plans for the two separate. How much of these was contingent on the NFL returning to Baltimore?
When the Colts left, that's when the wake-up call came. And, yes, it was the impetus for what became the whole complex. And the governor initially was focused on getting, Buddha told us this, we want to get an NFL franchise. We either want to get the Colts back or a new franchise. So, that kind of percolated for a while. And as I recall it, the Orioles said, hello, we're still a major league franchise and we're still here. Wouldn't you like to talk to us about what we would want and desire? I think that was a pivotal moment in the design, or in the process, because they absolutely hated that, for good reason, that multi-purpose design that we had produced. And I don't even think, I mentioned they had a design competition where we proposed keeping half of the warehouse. So that I think they liked that, but they thought, why not keep it all? And they absolutely hated the field geometry. So I think the football franchise leaving got the process started, but then as it rolled along, things changed quite dramatically.
Joe, wasn't the site location partly because they felt like if we get a football team, they could build both in the same complex with shared parking?
Yes, and that was a good idea. I remember the MSA came, Herb and others from the MSA came to Kansas City to see Royals and Kauffman Stadium. And that was good and bad because that convinced them that, maybe they could afford to build both facilities, the ballpark and the stadium. But it was also bad because they came away with the mindset of, Herb kept saying, Spartan Stadium, and that obviously wasn't going to fly with the Orioles. And I remember the other thing there's so many things in the history of this project. Governor Schaefer surprised, I think, everyone at a press conference one day, and he said, and we're going to have 800 number that anyone can call in and suggest sites. Anyone. And so, I remember everyone was kind of shocked. And so I think we analyzed at least two dozen sites, and some of them were easy because, oh, there's a city park next to my house, and it would be great to have. Well, okay, there's a restrictive covenant on that land. If it ever, the city ever tries to use it for anything other than a park, it reverts back to the original owners. There were a lot of sites that were suggested that were way too small. There were, so we developed a matrix and we analyzed various things. Transportation was one, economic impact was a big one. The size of the site, because by then we knew it would be twin facilities, was very important. And I remember it came down to Camden Yards or what's the fort?
Port Covington.
Port Covington.
Port Covington.
Thank you. So they said, well, which one would you recommend? And by then, we all thought, and the Orioles agreed, downtown is the way to go. So that's the decision to go to Camden Yards. Plus, it was much more visible. We knew with the parking between the two facilities, people working downtown would park there, walk past on the Utah Corridor, and see the play, you know, the baseball field. So it's free advertising every day. You walk to work from the parking, and you see the team doing exercises or the groundskeeper. And it just seemed a way to make it part of the daily experience here. So.
Sir.
Hi, thank you for speaking with us. I'm wondering about like the trends in stadiums. So Opaci ushered in this era of retro ballparks that are beloved across the league. But now we see a trend like in Atlanta, Miami, Arlington, of like going out into the suburbs, another county, and building like very sleek designs. Do you think that will continue, or teams, whenever another stadium comes up, will go back to the retro style that fans have gotten used to and still love 30 years later?
Well, I think more and more you will see teams want to be to control economic development around a facility. Now, I hope most of that is downtown because, you know, it's just a much richer experience. You know, Atlanta gets there, in my view, because there's all sorts of, you can make a day of it. You can take, you know, your grandkid to the game and there's things for you to do. But it's just, you know, the absolute worst is like Kansas City. I mean, people get in their car at home, they drive to the game, they go, they might have a hot dog and a beer. After the game, they get in their car and they drive home. And that was, you know, I mean, the Orioles were adamant that this not be that. So who knows what the future will hold.
Thank you.
Sure.
Sure.
First of all, I have to say I was at the first game at Camden Yards. But I seem to remember it was a very tedious and costly process to refurbish all the bricks in the warehouse. I mean, seems like that it was very time consuming.
Well, actually, I didn't think it was that bad at all. We were worried that when we re-tuck pointed, I think, the whole thing. And I remember we were trying to match the color of the brick, and Janet was very deep into that. Well, the problem was there's probably 57 different colors of bricks because that building was built incrementally over a number of years. But and then I remember we admired the warehouse A, B, C, and D signs up there. And so we had in the signage package, David Ashton said we should recreate those because we were worried that during the process of tuck pointing the brick, they would be destroyed. But they survived with no problem. So I don't think it was, I mean, I think the renovation of that building, as I said earlier, was not difficult. The only time I got nervous was the Orioles wanted a boardroom, and Janet probably knows where I'm going with this. So that, you know, that building has brick walls that are about so thick, and it's only 50 feet wide. I think there's two heavy timber columns and beams, and so there, I think, I don't know, 15 feet on center. Well, the Orioles wanted a boardroom that was 30 feet wide, and it wouldn't do to have a column in the middle. So we asked our structural engineers, a firm from Miami named Bliss Nitrade, you know, can we take that out? And they said, yeah, we'll have to design a steel transfer truss. Sorry. I said, well, what happens if it slips? And he said, that would be a bad day. Because he said, that's where I first heard the term progressive collapse, and it would have just...
I think I'm going to cancel my afternoon meeting in the boardroom today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sir?
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Steets. I've been to 47 Major League parks in
wow.
my life.
Wow.
To see games.
I've been to 51.
And I still have six or seven to go. But Camden Yards still is one of the best, if not the top. A couple questions on Camden Yards. The 2,000 seats you removed, where did you put them? But where do they go? Are they going to be brought back someday for some other purpose? The second point is down the right field line, where the foul pole, the right field fair pole is, those lower deck seats that there's no upper deck to it, I've always noticed that it looks like they come to a point at the top, and can you see, does that block the view from people on the second floor of the warehouse or anything like that? And is there any research that went behind that? And the last point I'd like to make is, when you sit down on left field line in seats, they don't face second base or the pitcher's mound. They just face straight out. So it's a pain in the neck. You always have to turn to look toward home plate for where all the action is. And then you're always interrupted by vendors coming by. Did you all think of that in advance, or is that something that you would correct afterward? And yeah. How much could you reposition the seats so they face second base, and how much would that cost?
Well, I mean, the question earlier, what would you do differently? We would definitely do that seat geometry differently today. And I think, if correct me if I'm wrong, Janet, I think in the third season, you worked with the seating company to design a seat that twisted more. But we called that the stiff neck seat section, and it was a real problem. And so, yeah, we would do that differently today. I don't know how, but we would do it differently today. In fact, my next Major League ballpark was Cleveland. And we had, we started the design of that while this project was finishing. And so we actually, I don't know if you guys did this, the redirected seats first here, but we used them in the down the line sections at Cleveland also. And I forget now, there's some magic amount of twist that, or some angle back to the infield that you don't get complaints. And so we always today try and avoid doing anything more acute than that. And then in terms of the seats.
Regarding
back,
the seats, I know that some of them were used at Ed Smith Stadium down in Sarasota. Mm-hmm. Those are repurposed Camden Yard seats. Some were put up for auction and sold for charity purposes. I do know that. Your other question about the terrace box sections 135 down the right field line.
I think
slightly it would impede the view of the field itself, although I think to create those sight lines for those fans, it far exceeds the need of the couple people that have offices there that don't get there as good of a view. Thanks.
My office is behind the scoreboard, so. We have time for one more question, Scott said. So, Oakland, you're up.
I was wondering if you could speak on the connection between the development of the stadium and the development of the Baltimore light rail system, because I'd heard that there was some collaboration between the state on that.
Do you have that at all?
No, I'm kind of fuzzy on that.
I mean, I do know that without question that was a major part of the project was mass transit and making sure that folks from the county in particular had an opportunity to come downtown without having to drive if they wanted to. So I think the light rail system, Janet would probably remember far better than I would, was a major discussion point of that. The MARC train station that is there as well that ran between D.C. and here, which doesn't run as frequently as it did back then, and it should, and hopefully will one day. You know, all of that was such a critical part of the infrastructure of the ballpark and ensuring fans who were used to going to Memorial Stadium and knowing how easy it was to get in and out and park there, that their experience coming downtown would not change the ease of getting to and from the games. Thanks.
Okay. I'd like to thank Joe Spear and Greg Bader.
Thank you.
And thank you for having me as your moderator. Please enjoy the rest of the conference. Please enjoy our great city of Baltimore, and have a great time at Camden Yards tonight. Thank you.